Thanks for joining us on the JX. A summertime chance to catch our breath seems like a great time to talk about the effects of the changing climate on human health. Oregon Health Authority recently put out a report on that subject titled simply Climate and Health in Oregon 2023 Report. So now you know which year it covers. And to take us into the details, we have Gabriella Goldfarb, Environmental Public Health Section Manager at the Oregon Health Authority. Gabriella, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
Good to have you. And let me remind our listeners, we are live. We can take your emails on this subject at jx@jeffnet.org. Gabriella, give the background, the report, and the reason for it.
We were directed by the previous governor, Governor Brown, in her 2020 climate executive order to issue an annual report on climate and health in Oregon. Certainly, as we saw accelerating impacts, it was top of mind that we really needed to report out more publicly the work that we've been doing for about a decade to build the evidence base for how climate is impacting people in Oregon, climate change and rapidly accelerating climate change, and spotlighting both the folks who are most vulnerable and being impacted, which a lot of times it's our communities of color, tribal communities, people with low incomes, as well as what are signs of how we're building resilience. And so that's our focus on these reports every year.
So this report lays out the details of the extreme climate conditions of 2023, then goes into some of the health effects. Talk about some of the key incidents last year.
So in 2023, we have to say that it was relatively milder, certainly compared to what we experienced in 2020 with the terrible Labor Day wildfires, 2021 with the heat dome in June of that year. So we didn't see the same extremes that we saw in those years, but we still saw clear signs of climate impacts. So the types of effects that we were seeing and we were able to dig into a little bit more is looking, for example, at the combined effects of both heat and smoke at the same time. Each of those are independent stressors, but together they will worsen health impacts for people who are particularly at risk. So we saw for certain groups, Alaska Native American groups, communities of color, some Asian communities, rates nearly double of health impacts compared to Oregon or people in Oregon overall. So that's one, one example of where we saw these, these effects. Certainly we saw in seven counties, including Jackson County, many days, 14 days where both of those measures were, above levels where we see heat effects. So in some parts of the state, and you all know that you are in a part of the state that tends to be more impacted by smoke every summer and more impacted by heat. So those are the kinds of things that we were spotlighting.
So is the health system up to snuff to handle the growing effects like the more days of heat, the more days of smoke, the more days of both?
So the health system, when you talk about health delivery, is where we need to catch people after they fall in. The public health focus is how do we prevent those things from happening? What are interventions we can do before? So helping get out the word to people about things they can do to build their resilience is really the focus from the public health side. How do we prevent that? And we are seeing a lot of investments that are taking us in the right direction. There's a lot more to do, but you saw the legislature step up, for example, to provide air filtration devices and portable air conditioners as short-term measures. And as longer-term measures, we saw a big investment in directing OHA to stand up a Healthy Homes grant program with a big focus on climate resilience, on keeping people safe from both heat and extreme excessive temperatures, heat and cold, and smoke. And so OHA, I don't have the list for you quite yet, but next month we are going to be rolling out an announcement about 34 organizations around the state that are going to be getting $20 million total grants to provide, to help people who are in their homes stay safe in their homes. And these are going to be, again, our priority communities from, you know, those folks who are most at risk because of low income and other status. So that's an exciting longer term intervention to build resilience around the state. And we're just seeing a lot more awareness, people taking steps like getting a DIY air filtration device put together. We have instructions for that on our website where you can use a box fan filter and the kind of HVAC filters that somebody would use in a central HVAC system and put those together, and you can make a cleaner air room in your home, for example, even if you don't have central air conditioning or a central HVAC system. So there's a lot of things that can be done along a spectrum of lower cost to, you know, higher cost interventions, or doing things like making a plan to go and stay elsewhere when smoke impacts are hitting. And so I think there's just a lot more awareness. And I think there is more awareness in our healthcare system as well about patients who may be at risk. So we are partnering with the coordinated care organizations that support our Oregon Health Plan folks. So there's a lot happening, and that's the positive that we also wanted to spotlight. And we've shown the spotlight on a few organizations in the Rogue Valley that are working towards climate resilience.
I do want to get to those in a moment. We're talking to Gabriella Goldfarb at the Oregon Health Authority, where Gabriella is the Environmental Public Health Section Manager. We're talking about the recently released report, Climate and Health in Oregon 2023 report. And you can join us on the exchange with emails to jx@jeffnet.org. Before we get to the organizations that were singled out for mention in the report in Southern Oregon, I want to come back to the point you made about the effects of climate change falling more heavily on people of color. And it talks about not just the impacts, but also about creating culturally grounded climate and health education curricula. I wonder where those stand. In the works, implemented, on the drawing board, where?
So the way we are doing that is by resourcing organizations that are closest to those communities and know those communities and are equipped to deliver those messages from a trusted community organization. So OHA started actually, I'd say, you know, before pandemic times. We were moving towards recognizing community-based organizations as an important part of the public health system, and that really accelerated during COVID, where we directly resourced a number of organizations, I mean, over 150 organizations around the state to deliver COVID services. And as we came through the peak of the pandemic, the legislature stepped up and started significantly funding something we call public health modernization. The legislature and OHA had been in conversation over a decade to make clear what was needed to have a modern public health system in Oregon. And one of the things that was recognized was that environmental health was not resourced at the local or state level. And in the 2021 legislature provided funding that allowed us to resource about 50 or so organizations around the state to figure out what is it that their communities need to become more climate resilient. Right now we have about 57 organizations, and this is out of close to 200 organizations that are now OHA community-based organization grantees. So we have close to 60 organizations that are integrating climate into their messaging. So they're doing it in all different ways. For some, it's, you know, community gardens. For some, it's emergency preparedness, education. They're figuring out what their community needs. So there's not a single curriculum. OHA wouldn't be the right messenger for that. So we are building that capacity in local community-based organizations.
Climate and health, the topic here in the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking about the report, Climate and Health in Oregon 2023, out of the Oregon Health Authority. Gabriella Goldfarb is the Environmental Public Health Section Manager at OHA, discussing the contents of it with us. You can get an input here, too, with an email to jx at jeffnet.org. You mentioned a couple of organizations and efforts that that did get spotlighted. The report does spotlight the long-term recovery group in Jackson County, long-term recovery from the Alameda fire of 2020. What warranted attention on the climate and health front with them?
Well, that's exactly the kind of work that needs to happen across communities in Oregon. Really, one of the key elements to building climate resilience is building social connections, you know, having people look out for each other, having people have networks where they can get information they need and support they need. And so, you know, we wanted to spotlight them as a model that other communities can follow to strengthen their communities and the base for identifying resources that are needed, changing systems that need to be changed, and facilitating community voice, because they are guided by the Rogue Reimagined, this community-led planning process, which this partnership between local government agencies, community-based organizations working on housing, senior services, food relief, a broad spectrum of things, and climate resilience is going to need to tap all of that.
When we talk about climate resilience, and I want to come back for just a second to the heat and smoke days, I mean, it certainly looks like there's a good chance for us to have more of those and more over time. But is the goal that we have fewer people having to seek medical attention, even though the conditions are there?
That's exactly right. So, for example, we see that certain places in the state, you can have the same temperature, but some people will come into our emergency departments with heat-related illness at a lower temperature than other places where people have a better chance to get acclimatized. So frankly, in Southern Oregon, people get acclimatized as the springtime gets warmer and warmer over a longer period of time. Your body adapts to heat, has those mechanisms to be able to adapt. Folks on the coast, when they get a sudden heat wave, their bodies have not had a chance to adapt, and they're ending up in the emergency department at a much lower temperature than folks, for example, in Southern Oregon might show up. So that awareness, and we are working, for example, on developing, just like we have air quality advisories, we would like to be issuing regional heat illness advisories where we can warn people in different parts of the state at temperature levels that are significant for their region, where the point at which we see people showing up in those emergency departments. That's an example of a tool that we are working to develop to help give people information to protect themselves. If we issue that heat advisory, for the coast, for example, we probably wouldn't be issuing one for Southern Oregon at the same time, because we're not seeing those same rates of heat-related illness. But those folks on the coast will know that they need to get the information as well at the same time about the steps they need to take to protect their health.
We've spent so much time talking about heat and smoke, Gabrielle. I wonder what is number three on the list of climate health impacts?
So something that we're seeing a lot of is harmful algae blooms. They're not actually algae. The technical name is cyanobacteria. And we have all kinds of bacteria in our waters, and most of them are not harmful at all, but some, under the right conditions, the wrong conditions, more heat, for example, will produce toxic toxins. And those are dangerous, I'll say, actually, especially for animals, are much more sensitive. And, we're seeing more dog deaths, for example.
Right, dogs slurping up puddle water, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right, and licking their fur and all of that. So folks really need to be careful. But also small children are more at risk. For adults, it's going to be, gastrointestinal ailments, things like that. Sometimes it's hard to tell the difference from whether you've ingested some cyanotoxins or have had, your potato salad sitting out in the sun too long at your picnic, but that is an effect that we are seeing, and the legislature again has stepped up. We had some years ago in the city of Salem's water supply, which the city was also supplying drinking water to five other communities, we saw levels of cyanotoxin in the finished drinking water at levels that were a risk for sensitive populations. And that was a real wake-up call. And so the legislature has given resources to OHA and DEQ to establish a program to more systematically monitor for those cyanotoxins. So that's something that affects recreation, not only, you know, water, sure. Water systems are now gearing up and so that they can treat them, but recreational waters are really important for particularly communities with low incomes. It's an affordable place to recreate. So
a lot to think about, clearly, in the years ahead. The report is called Climate and Health in Oregon 2023 Report. Gabrielle Goldfarb is at the Oregon Health Authority. Thanks for sharing this with us on the Jefferson Exchange.
Oh, thank you so much for the time. Appreciate it.
You bet. This is JPR.